Hey, folks, it's Monday, July 8th, 2019. I'm Sam Cedar, and I have an announcement to make. No, I'm not retiring. Sorry. And no, Donald Trump has not had a stroke. Again, apologies. No, it's good news, which is not to say that some of those other things I just mentioned might not be good news, but this is a different type of news. We're launching a new podcast. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Sam, what's wrong with you? The Majority Report puts out more content every week than I can listen to now. Are you insane? Well, the answer is you may be right. I may be crazy, but it just might be a lunatic you're looking for. Forget that. Sorry. The point is, the new show is going to be short. It's going to be a morning show that basically gives you the top stories to watch out for throughout the day. It'll be quick, super quick, like a quickie. In fact, we're calling it Majority.fm's AM Quickie. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Sam, are you insane? How are you going to do two shows every day? Who's going to feed your kids breakfast when you have custody of them? How are you going to prep for the Majority Report? Well, the answer is Lucy. In fact, Lucy Steiner. Lucy, are you here?
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Lucy. Lucy Steiner, ladies and gentlemen. Lucy is a comedian who worked with our very own Brendan on a political comedy show that sadly never launched. She's funny and smart, and I know you're going to love hearing from her when I'm tied up with the kids in the morning.
Ah, thanks, Sam. We're launching the show Wednesday of this week. It'll be live in the Majority Report feed for the first few weeks, so you won't need to do anything extra to find it. Eventually, we're hoping to have it posted in the morning every day by 8:30 a.m., but that might take a while.
That's right, folks. You know the routine. We'll drop something in the feed tomorrow morning to get you ready for Majority.fm's AM Quickie. Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Sam.
And now for the Majority Report.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, July 8th, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, indicted for sex trafficking. As many elites hold their collective breaths. Meanwhile, Department of Justice changes lawyers in the census case as career attorneys balk. Speaking of attorneys, a grand jury investigating Trump buddy and GOP fundraiser Elliot Brody. Iran passes the nuclear threshold. Cuomo signs a bill to release Trump's taxes to Congress. UN human rights chief appalled by the U.S. treatment of migrants. Justin Amash appalled at the GOP. Bolts the party. Still nuts on most things. And Customs and Border Protection, turns out, knew about that Facebook group almost since the day it was launched. In Brazil, Glenn Greenwald targeted by Bolsonaro. Nancy Pelosi finally does something. Sadly, it's to attack the source of energy in the Democratic Party. In the Queens DA race, sort of a surrogate to relive the AOC fight against Crowley, Katz pulls ahead of Caban because of dubious ballot affidavit disqualifications. Joe Crowley still has friends in Queens, folks. Meanwhile, Joe Biden sort of apologizes for praising segregationists. Tom Steyer, is jumping into the race, because why not? And lastly, Amazon workers in Minnesota plan a Prime Day strike. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're all back here after an extended break. Jamie, however, apparently has run into problems leaving the border of the communist camp that she is in. We're not unclear where it is. But she went to commie camp, and the indoctrination, I guess, has not ended. She is continuing. She'll be back, I think, by Wednesday or Thursday. Hope that you had a good weekend and a good holiday. Of course, we were not here on Friday, though I would encourage you, and it will be relevant to the conversation we have about Nancy Pelosi today, to check out Alex Perrine. He had some very good points on this front, and we will get there in just a moment. I want to remind you of a couple of things. One, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you an ad-free version of the show, and we give you an extended version, twice the amount of content. jointhemajorityreport.com. It's your support that makes this show possible. Of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And as we noted in the pre-roll of today's podcast, or will, we are launching a new show. It's just going to be very quick, not even maybe 5 minutes a day, maybe. But it's going to give you the top headlines, a little bit of depth, tiny bit of depth, barely any depth, of a couple of top stories, but a couple of headlines every morning. So we're ultimately aiming, I think, for about 8:30 in the morning to get it out the door. But it may start a little bit later than that. And you will hear a new voice that you have not heard on this show, and I think you'll enjoy her voice, but more on that in the coming days. She will be, we're going to trade off the sort of the main responsibilities for the show, depending on whether I'm with my kids or not. That's basically the way we're going to do that. So check that out. Enjoy it. It will be in the Majority Report feed for at least several weeks. And we will give you an update of when we move it to its own feed. But you won't have to do anything other than listen to it. And it'll pop up on your feed, whether it's a members or the public feed, as the AM Quickie. That's what we've decided to call it. Subject to change, of course.
Hi.
But there it is.
It's AM Quickie time.
There you go. That will pop up in your feed. So let's just start with, obviously Donald Trump had his 4th of July celebration and, God spoke and, poured rain on everybody. There was no flooding, although, one could have anticipated that.
The tank's okay?
I guess the tanks were okay. I'll be honest with you. I didn't watch it. I didn't pay much attention to it at all. Obviously, Donald Trump screwed up in his speech. We may get to that. But also, what he did and what happened this week is that the American women's soccer team won the World Cup. Who they beat in that? It was
the Netherlands.
The Netherlands. And this has been a source of some controversy. Because the team, I don't know, is she the team captain? Yeah. Rapinoe, is she the team captain? She's been pretty vocal about having no interest in going to the White House and critiquing Trump. And Donald Trump apparently a couple of days ago said, you know, do your job. And win, maybe shouldn't talk so much. And so they won, and then they continued talking. And soccer has been one of those sports around the world that has been very much associated with politics. maybe because it's an international sport. I'm not sure. We don't infuse politics in, with as many things in this country, although sports are certainly becoming far more political. And I think it was stories of maybe people who had a fandom in the Spanish Civil War for soccer teams, I think it was. Or maybe the fascists later. I can't quite remember the story that inspired me to, you know, put a black mark through my Patriots hats. And since they did not go to the White House, I was able to take those pieces of tape off. And here is a guy from Fox News going down. I guess this must have been on Sunday. Thinking he was going to cover. Oh, no, he's in France, right? With a bunch of probably expat Americans. Maybe not. Watching the final game of the World Cup. As the U.S. women's team wins, I guess, their record fourth title. I didn't realize that. And Fox gets a real sort of man or woman on the street perspective on how Trump is doing in Europe.
He has just been made, Arthel. We are here in a sports bar in Lyon, France. Here, listen to it. That we are in a sports bar. We were going to be outside. We were going to be looking at a screen with the football game there.
That's the classic soccer chant of F Trump, I think is what they're saying.
You can really see how sports fans hate it when you politicize their sports.
Right. They really hate it. I think they were also yelling, Fox sucks. I think there's half of them were going, Fox sucks, and the other one were going, F Trump.
That's versatile.
Those dovetail really nicely.
Yeah, it is a pretty
synchronized
amazing
message.
So there it is.
Wow. Do you feel the hate?
And that's why the soccer hate will never be big in this country. Never be big. Let's get into this briefly. I mean, at this point, to the extent that this is a political story, it has to do with a billionaire. And we know that billionaires are a policy failure, definitionally. And while it doesn't have necessarily sort of the broad implications, there's certainly a microcosm. I mean, this is a guy who has been above the law. And in 2008, Jeffrey Epstein was convicted, or I guess convicted of prostitution, right?
I thought it was a plea bargain. He took a plea deal.
He pled guilty to two state prostitution charges, and he served 13 months in prison. He was supposedly facing federal charges, and this is because of him paying women who were underage, girls. He had to register as a sex offender. He paid restitution to the victims. But he escaped federal prosecution because he had made a deal with the U.S. attorney down there, a guy named Alexander Acosta.
Sounds familiar.
He sounds familiar because he's now the Secretary of Labor, is that right? In the Trump administration. And in sometime, I guess, at the beginning of the year, maybe the end of last year, the Miami Herald did an investigation of how that case was being handled by Acosta. And essentially, it found out that the victims were not made aware of this plea deal, which is the obligation of the prosecutor to do. You need the victims to sign off on a plea deal. The Herald investigation basically characterized Epstein as getting the deal of a lifetime from Acosta. there were 36 underage victims, according to this federal investigation. The agreement short-circuited the FBI probe. It also granted immunity to any co-conspirators in the case so that nobody could come back and testify against him. In February of this year, a federal judge in Florida ruled that Acosta, by not informing these victims of this plea deal, broke the law. I don't know what the implications of that. Well, I guess based upon that report, U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York started looking into this. Because at one point, I imagine Epstein and his offenses touched New York. And as of today, they indicted him on, and we're still getting sort of the details. But he was indicted for sex trafficking. Essentially, he would engage in a predatory pattern in which he would bring underage girls into a room to so-called perform massages in Epstein's New York mansion. The girls were instructed by him, or apparently as like surrogates, like old girlfriends and friends or something like that, who would tell the girls to perform, you know, do this in the, you know, naked and to engage in sex acts. The indictment also implicates some of Epstein's employees. Apparently, some of these employees would make sure that if he's going from Florida to New York, that he would have, you know, a bevy of minors available to him. I mean, this is pretty sick stuff. And he's been able to get away with this for maybe decades because of people like Acosta. And for people like, apparently there was a GQ piece in which these rumors were going to be talked about, and Graydon Carter struck them from the piece, I think in the late 90s. You know, an editor can make that determination based upon, you know, how much evidence you have. It's a difficult charge if you don't have enough evidence. I don't have a sense of how much evidence was there, but it, certainly the writer thought she had enough. She does not blame Graydon Carter. But someone like this is untouchable because who they surround themselves with in terms of friends. Alan Dershowitz is one of the people who's being accused by some of these victims. There's some reason to believe that Donald Trump maybe has been accused by these victims. You'll recall that there was a lawsuit against him brought in California that was thrown out because it was filed improperly. But there was some rumor before the election that this then 13-year-old girl was going to bring it. We'll see. Epstein had a relationship with the Clintons as well. He loaned them use of his plane. I suspect if Acosta was aware of any implications regarding the Clintons, we might already have found that out at one point. But who knows? But it just goes to show you what he's able to get away with here and has been able to get away with for so long. But for a reporter at the Miami Herald, essentially, really digging into this in an era, right, where there's a increased sensitivity to the idea of powerful men getting away with stuff. But for that, this guy would have gotten away with some of the most heinous things that you can do in our society because he's a billionaire. You don't brush up against a U.S. attorney with these kind of charges and get away with it for any other casual reasons. It's because of the power that comes with a billionaire. So you could imagine what billionaires can get away with in this country that don't involve what society considers literally to be the worst thing that you can do. Child rape. Multiple child rape. Like an operation to commit child rape. So it just gives you a sense of the problems with this type of consolidated power and money. So we'll see what happens with this guy. There's a lot of people I think are pretty upset. You know, my understanding is that Dershowitz wrote a letter to the Pulitzer Committee saying, listing all these reasons why that Miami Herald piece should not get the Pulitzer because it had been nominated. There was a 2002 quote from Trump that Epstein likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. Direct quote. I never met him. Don't know who he is.
Right. And I mean, I think it's also worth, you know, the flight logs of Epstein's plane. And this is, you know, making distinctions that, as you pointed out with Dershowitz and Trump, it's there's a higher level of scrutiny, but there's no implication that Larry Summers or Steven Pinker or anybody like that are involved in this sort of thing. But these are all people also like Naomi Campbell who've been on this guy's plane. And it's just also this new Daily Beast piece about all of the money that he's given to various organizations at Harvard, various nonprofits. It's just really important to dig into how somebody can just insulate themselves. Even as you say, I mean, this is not like, oh, he's a billionaire. He gets away with, I don't know, drunk driving, right? Like this is, as you say, nothing worse. And he's insulated deeply into a lot of parts of society.
Yeah, I mean, and it's indicative of a larger problem, right? But this is basically how, if you were doing the metaphor in the theater production, this is what you would do. This is the way you would express this much larger societal problem without having to tackle all of those things.
I would read this Gawker piece from 2015. Flight logs put Clinton Dershowitz on pedophile billionaire's sex jet, which is their, you know, that's a Gawker headline. But it gets into the detail of these flight logs, and I think it's worth knowing about.
So we will be following that, obviously, to the extent that it has implications on society. Like, broadly speaking, I don't like to follow criminal trials. I just... You know, I mean, maybe personally, but not in terms of news. I mean, that stuff, I just have never, I don't know why I'm allergic to that, but I don't find it that.
Because you shouldn't, I mean, at least in my opinion, you shouldn't necessarily have in the dog in the fight of a conviction, frankly, as a journalist or a commentator.
Yeah, I think that's basically it.
And
it's sort of what's going to happen with the court is going to happen, and there's not a lot of politics involved in that. The politics that are going to be involved in it are really on how he got to this point and who gets implicated beyond it. And that's basically it. We need to talk about what's going on at the border. The And this has been, you know, like this has been since day one of this administration. It was quite clear that immigrants and would-be immigrants, and specifically from Central America in particular, but also, you know, places like the Caribbean and Africa and Syria, I guess, refugees, were going to be the ones who pay the price the most for the Trump administration. But this is the way that all oppressive regimes start. They go towards the weakest members of society, the ones who have the least political power. The gypsies, the Jews, the homosexuals. I mean, that's sort of like the way that these things go. The immigrant. And so in many respects, they're the canaries in the coal mine. But really, they're also just like they're the people in the coal mine, too. The UN Human Rights, what do they call it? I want to say raconteur, but I'm not 100% sure what they, appellate?
Repertoire?
The Bachelet? What is it? No, Bachelet is
Wait, Michelle
name.
Bachelet is right. Her name.
It is the Michelle Bachelet. She's the human rights chief, I guess they call it. They used to have a different name for her. Is appalled, according to her office Monday, at the notion, as she says, as a pediatrician, but also as a mother and a former head of state, I'm deeply shocked that children are forced to sleep on the floor in overcrowded facilities without access to adequate health care or food, with poor sanitation conditions, in a statement released by the UN. New York Times on Saturday had an extended look at the migrant detention center, so-called migrant detention center in Clint, Texas. Apparently, after interviewing dozens of people, the men and women who work there were grappling with the stuff of nightmares. Outbreaks of scabies, shingles, and chickenpox were spreading among the hundreds of children who were being held in cramped cells, agents said. The stench of the children's dirty clothing was so strong it spread to the agents' own clothing. People in town would scrunch their noses when they left work. The children cried constantly. One girl seemed likely enough to try to kill herself that the agents made her sleep on a cot in front of them so they could watch her as they were processing new arrivals. Some Border Patrol agents spoke about how dehumanizing it was. They mentioned that the Border Patrol leaders, including Aaron Hall, the outspoken chief patrol agent of the agency's El Paso sector, have disputed descriptions of degrading conditions inside Clint and other migrant detention sites around El Paso. But a review of the operations of the Clint station near El Paso's eastern edge show that the agency's leadership knew for months that some children had no beds to sleep on, no way to clean themselves, and sometimes went hungry. Its own agents had raised the alarm and found themselves having to accommodate even more arrivals. The piece goes on from there. There's some very heartbreaking stories of individual kids and their parents. You should check it out. It's disgusting. And I don't know that it's really, frankly, anything other than the plan that the Trump administration has. Here is Donald Trump claiming he's seen this places and they're great.
But here's the thing. When people come in illegally, and then it's crowded. And I've seen some of those places, and they are run beautifully. They're clean. They're good. They do a great job. They do a great job. They're crowded because the Democrats will not give us any relief from these loopholes. We have loopholes that are so bad. We have asylum that's so bad. So these places are, many of them, not all of them, but many of them, they're incredible. They're really well run. I'll tell you what, and I said it yesterday, Border Patrol did not train to be doctors and nurses and janitors. That's not what they trained to be. They trained to be Border Patrol, and that's what they're doing, and they're doing a phenomenal job. Because of the country, because we're doing so well as a country, we've never done this well.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, we don't need to hear more. So this is where we're at. Bad enough should be for people to abandon the Republican Party, but it won't be. It won't be. That's just, I mean, meanwhile, the FBI and ICE apparently are using states' driver's license databases and going through using facial recognition software without any knowledge or consent, obviously, of people.
Thank you, Silicon Valley, for that.
Yeah.
That could be Palantir specifically, but regardless, I mean.
It's unclear what they're looking for in those things. I guess maybe they just scan through to try and find out individuals. I've heard stuff about the DEA doing this stuff too a while back. I'm not sure what ICE has to do with it, but there you go. And then lastly, you recall the other day we talked about the story that ProPublica broke about a Facebook group where former Customs and Border Protection officers, current ones, some supervisors anyways, they haven't been able to identify all of them, but 9,500 people who refer to themselves as all being part of the family, 20,000 Customs and Border Protection officers in the country, and all sorts of horrific things being put up there. Acts of violence towards immigrants, depictions of AOC, basically being sexually assaulted by the president, claims of threats to assault Ocasio-Cortez, complete disregard for the life of the immigrants who have died. I mean, just a horrific, talk about a red flag. Exhibit A and why this organization is so putrid. But with that said, could be a few bad apples, right? You can't blame the organization for a few bad apples that are just joining these groups. It's not like the organization knew about it and condoned it. Although it's exactly like that. Yeah, exactly. Customs and I think this is from the Washington Post, Politico, excuse me. Customs and Border Protection officials have been aware for up to 3 years that a secret Facebook group for current and former Border Patrol agents was posting offensive messages far longer than previously reported. We should tell you that the group was established 3 years ago. Border Patrol leadership knew about photos posted to the group as far back as 2016 when agents reported them. It's according to a current Homeland Security official. The images, several of which were provided to Politico, show agents engaging in conduct that includes simulating sex acts and taking selfies while defecating. Former DHS official said he was aware of the Facebook group during the past year. Neither official knew of any serious punishment ever leveled at members of the Facebook group. That's called condoning it, folks. That's called condoning it. Top Homeland Security Department officials, including DHS Secretary Kevin McLean and Border Patrol Chief Carla Provost, denounced these posts this week and pledged to hold any culpable agents accountable. This is an organization that you got to start over. You don't build it in this fashion, but this, remember, this is an outfit basically that has been weaponized and militarized only for 17 years.
2002. Right after September 11th. It's weaponized from the beginning. It's focused on war on terrorism.
But the point is like, 17 years later, this thing was corrosive from the beginning. It is now woven into the fabric of this agency. You got to get rid of it. Total house cleaning. Total. Bring it back, and hopefully, in the context of what we heard from the presidential candidates the other day, bring it back as an agency that's dedicated towards assuring the safety of Americans rather than the policing of potential immigrants. So it's one thing to say, like, yeah, let me see your passport. It's another to round people up and put them in steel hangers, essentially. Lastly, an update on a story that Ronald Reagan told us, I don't know, a couple months ago. That, was he saying that one of his clients was involved? I can't remember, but I think so. Former ICE chief counsel. This is an attorney and a officer of the court, as they call him, gets 4 years in prison for stealing immigrants' identities. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that as we talk about like all the dangers that come from immigrants.
They tempt people into crime.
Exactly.
He was an officer of the court. And then he got tempted into crime. I mean, it's a really great tragedy.
Well, it's like you think about, you know, Trump can't hire lawyers that don't seem just on the face of them corrupt. But it's not just a Trump problem. ICE's chief counsel was stealing immigrants' identities.
I mean, ICE is a structurally unacceptable organization.
There must be something just so horrific about the mission of this agency that it is like this is the type of people who are joining it.
And it doesn't need to exist. Like when we talk about policing organization, like police, right? One of the reasons I don't go for those sort of like, yeah, man, just like get rid of the cop stuff is because like, look, anything short of a complete utopia, in fact, actually almost certainly in a utopia, you're going to need something that functionally corresponds to police. The question is radically changing the police. But this is an organization that does not need to exist. There is nothing, even with a border, and as you said, it checks people's passports, it does whatever, we still have a border. There's nothing structurally necessary about this thing existing, period.
But, I mean, how would you steal immigrants' identities?
Right. Well, I'm actually, you know, for what it's worth, in fact, you could... You know, I'm sure just by checking people's passports and stuff, you could get relevant info.
Right, that's true.
I think you could still do ID theft, just not child toilet drinking.
Right, just a photocopy machine.
I'll throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Don't forget, that's one of the early episodes of Narcos, when they fly to Colombia. They didn't get detained. They just took photocopies of the passport and sent it to the cartel.
There you go.
And I think if Colombia could figure that out in the late 80s, the United States in 2019 can as well.
All right, lastly, let's end the... first half of the show with a clip of Donald Trump in his July 4th.
Oh, really quick. I'm sorry. Did you get the IM?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, big news in the presidential race.
Swalwell. All's well that ends Swalwell, I guess.
I guess
Swalwell dropping.
He took his one moment in the national spotlight to make diaper jokes and make Joe Biden seem sympathetic by constantly telling him that he was going to die.
Respect to Swalwell.
Yeah.
It's better than Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper?
No, Hickenlooper is still there. Hickenlooper is totally the guy in the movie that seems kind of sedate and bland, but you're like, oh, that guy's a psycho. Like, everybody's going to drop out. Everybody's going to quit his campaign. He's going to be like, I don't care. I'll fly around drinking frack water and ranting about socialism. That guy's deranged.
Guys who don't necessarily have a future in politics are the ones that they're just going to...
could run for Senate. Yeah. No problem. This is self-created oblivion.
All right, so Donald Trump was out giving a speech on July 4th. People were annoyed that the Parks Department had to spend millions of dollars to accommodate tanks on trailers, I guess, or I don't know.
Platforms.
So ridiculous and stupid. And apparently people got soaked there and didn't enjoy themselves, which is great. And here's Donald Trump. I mean, again, this is one of those situations where if you were living in a repressive regime and you were a cameraman, you would be like, how can I send a message without having being held to it, right? Like, this is why, like, satire exists. And here it is, an image of Donald Trump with, like, on a rain-streaked plexiglass. I don't know if they claimed, I don't even know how they described this, if they claimed that there was a malfunction with the teleprompter. But here's Donald Trump talking about the Revolutionary War and making some pretty bad
anachronisms.
Yeah, I guess so.
It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do.
Wait, go back earlier. You need to lead into that a little bit more. Yeah, go back a little bit earlier. Okay.
It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do. And at Fort McHenry, under the rocket's red glare, it had nothing but victory. And when dawn came, their star-spangled banner waved defiant.
Just to remind you, he's talking about the Revolutionary War. Now, one of the major military failures of George Washington was to expend so much resources in building airports at a time where we did not have airplanes. That was a very controversial choice, but...
Well, that was one of the earliest splits
Benedict Arnold's
in our,
like,
politics. That Jefferson was fiercely opposed to airport
Benedict Arnold. It's like, build it.
We're going to future-proof our...
Wait, it turns out instead of being a traitor, Benedict Arnold was just an early Silicon Valley guy.
So I'm just future envisioning.
In June of 1775, the Continental Congress created a unified army out of the revolutionary forces encamped around Boston and New York and named after the great George Washington, Commander-in-Chief. The Continental Army suffered a bitter winter. A Valley Forge found
they
glory
named
across
it after George Washington, or they named George Washington the commander.
George Washington's middle name was Army.
Oh, I see.
Yes,
that's the waters correct. Of the Delaware, and seized victory from Cornwallis of Yorktown. Our army manned the airport. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do.
Wait, go back. What did he swallow something? Like, it's possible that there was a malfunction in the in the teleprompter, which makes this even worse because it means like he literally had no idea what words were coming out of his mouth. Like he didn't even know what century he was talking about. Go back just a little bit more. I mean, just a little bit. Just, yeah, right there.
Seized victory from Cornwallis of Yorktown. Our army manned the airport. It ran.
It manned the what? The amperes?
Our army manned the airport. It ran the ramparts.
The amperes?
It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do. And at Fort McHenry,
under
the rocket's red glare, it had nothing but victory. And when dawn came, their star-spangled banner waved defiant. At Shiloh, Antietam, and Gettysburg, our soldiers gave the last full measure of devotion for the true unity of our nation and the freedom of all Americans.
Oh, he's definitely got, he's got the Adderall thing going or whatever it is that he does.
In the trenches of World War I, an Army sergeant named Alvin York faced an inferno of enemy fire and refused to retreat. He said, I won't leave, and refused to have enemy fire and refused to retreat. He said, I won't leave, I won't stop. He shot his rifle 18 times, killing 18 of the enemy. When they fixed bayonets and charged, he killed 7 more. The entire German machine gun battalion surrendered because of one man, Alvin York. A generation later, the Army returned to Europe and embarked upon a great crusade. With knives and rifles in hand, the Rangers scaled the cliffs of Normandy. The 101st Airborne leapt into the danger from above. Illuminated only by enemy flares, explosions, and burning aircraft, they threw back the Nazi Empire with lightning of their own from the turrets of Sherman tanks.
He doesn't know anything that he's reading here. I mean, he as far as he's concerned, he could still be in the 18th century.
There's the MacArthur part.
Yeah.
And then MacArthur came and he told the British, we like the Queen very much. We're going to have our own country now. Did you see that meme I sent you?
No.
It's worth putting up just for the full immaturity of it. Why not? I have no problem with this.
How many was it? Was it? It was one by land, two by sea, and three by air. Was it
exactly three by air?
It's a British Airways Boeing jet.
It just goes to show you,
Shuhana Hussein.
It just goes to show you that you can overcome these things, even if you're completely outgunned in technology.
I mean, could you imagine? We were such brutal, ruthless guerrillas that we actually defeated the British when they had a fully equipped air force.
We should get the point about how unimportant air superiority is after
exactly.
our Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, join themajorityreport.com. Your support makes this show possible. We in the fun half today, we're going to be talking about a lot about what's going on, basically, in the 2020 race. A lot of polls. They're all over the place to a certain extent. Oh, we didn't even get to Pelosi stuff, which we're going to talk about. I mean, and just, you know, briefly, I'll just say this before we get into the fun half. There's just two aspects of this that sort of mitigate my critique of Pelosi. One is the real possibility that Chuck Schumer is such a disaster that Pelosi really can't do much about it. But if that is the case, which I think could very well be the case, and these things aren't mutually exclusive, there's also no reason for Pelosi to be doing what she's doing. You know, there's a quality to this of like, welcome to the dollhouse. Kid gets picked on at school and then goes home and kicks the dog type of situation. And the other aspect of this is in terms of, and I tweeted this on the yesterday, is that copping to being supportive of her as the majority leader, ultimately the Speaker of the House, because of the absence of any other legit candidates. Now, Seth Moulton, I mean, but Tim Ryan, here's this. It is hard to imagine a worse situation than we have now. Like, I don't see any plan. Doesn't matter what her skill set is if they're not doing anything. If Nancy Pelosi's not going to do anything, if she's not going to impeach, or if she's afraid to impeach because of Chuck Schumer, because he won't deliver anybody, if she can't get a bill that provides money to Customs and Border Protection, that provides also oversight, some type of reporting, some type of access for members of Congress. If she can't get that, or Chuck Schumer has made it impossible to get that, which I think is also true, right? He released everybody in the Senate. Then whether it's her failure or Chuck Schumer's failure, the bottom line is it makes having her there irrelevant. Any of the positives that you could argue came from having Pelosi in that position are irrelevant, and they are particularly irrelevant. And in fact, I would say begin to argue for the other side when she goes out of her way to attack the left of the party, or at the very least the youth of the party, or the energy of the party. I mean, I don't know that AOC's positions on this stuff have been to the left. I don't know if it's a left position to say we should impeach. I don't know if it's a left position to say, hey, we need oversight for this agency that we're going to give these billions of dollars to. But it's certainly a more aggressive one. And she is afraid of that, or is whatever the problem is. But where's the value in having Nancy Pelosi there if she's not going to do anything? Then
well,
it doesn't matter
doing,
how
she's
bad.
Doing something, right? She's attacking the left.
Well, but I mean, my point is if she's attacking the left and doing some other stuff that is good, then
well, I think
we yeah, at least you can make an assessment.
Clearly, her mission, right? Like, she's chosen to go to war with one force primarily.
And it's
these
it certainly
four
appears that, and I don't. This is her electoral strategy. Seems like a pretty piss poor one to me. Because between AOC, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, Tlaib, that's who you need to come out in terms of voters in 2020 if you're going to win. Young women of color. You need those people to come out in 2020 in droves if you're going to win. And I don't know if she's just lost a step or whatever it is, but it ain't working. We'll talk a little more about that in the fun half, as well as maybe we can put together a swan song for Eric Swalwell. So sorry.
You're so old. Russia. You're old. You're super old.
All right. 646-257-3920. Oh, today is Monday. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Michael, what's happening on Tuesday?
We have an interview with somebody calling us anonymously, I believe, from the occupied Western Sahara, which is one of the more sort of complicated political and basically the only other occupation in the world besides Israel-Palestine is Morocco occupying this piece of land in the Western Sahara, and there's a lot of movement building there that's interesting and worth talking about. So we're going to go have that conversation. Then Emma Viglin joins us in studio. We have a whole bunch to talk about, including, of course, this viral video she did with this Cuban Trump supporter, as well as Iran. Iran has started enriching. What's the play out of that? And a whole bunch more. This past weekend, we did an illicit history of the creation of the bureaucracy of the military-industrial complex with Daniel Bessner. And also, I would say, tickets are starting to move fast now as we get to the last several weeks before the Chicago live show. You can get your tickets on the Majority.fm homepage, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube.
Matt.
A Literary Hangover. There's a new nonfiction episode of Literary Hangover up on Rutger Bregman's Utopia for Realists. We've had him on this show, folks. We talk about his UBI, why Yang's UBI is trash, his open borders persuasiveness, which I think he's really good at messaging, and also how he had Steven Pinker blurb his book and said like that it's very good, and then how he bashes Steve Pinker as an optimist sort of whiner in interviews. So I like that about Rucker. So yeah, I'm a fan of Rucker Bregman. I sort of position it as the debate between the sort of Keynesian reformists and the Marxist revolutionaries. And I think that's actually, if we had a an actual battlefield of ideas that wasn't overly influenced by power and stuff, that would be where we were arguing. So I think it's an interesting book for that sort of argument. And me and my friend Chris have that.
All right, quick break. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.